Well, good morning, everyone, and it's a pleasure to be here on such a nice morning. I'm going to be talking about axon regeneration. Usually when I come here, I talk about plasticity, but today I thought I would talk to you about axon regeneration, which is our other main program in the lab. And what I've got here is a picture of what I would call real axon regeneration. This is a picture from Cahal's book. And it's a picture of regeneration in a peripheral nerve, probably the sciatic nerve, that has been cut. And you can see pretty much all the axons have made an attempt to regenerate into the distal stump. Some have got lost in the scar tissue along the way. But this is what I would call decent regeneration. Now, for many years, I and many of us have been trying to make axons in the spinal cord regenerate. And we've been doing it primarily by trying to cancel out the inhibitory molecules that are in the environment of the spinal cord. So that is no-go A, chondroitin sulfate proteoglycans, semaphorin 3A, and other molecules. And this is a picture of the type of regeneration that we see. This actually is a no-go A experiment, but a chondroitin A's CSPG experiment would look very similar. Here's the corticospinal tract of the rat. This is a T-shaped lesion which cuts the corticospinal tract. And here are a few axons that have regenerated past the injury site and on into the distal part of the spinal cord. So this is a small proportion of the axons. They've regenerated for less than a centimeter, a few millimeters. It's probably functionally significant, but it's very, very different to the full regeneration that I showed you in the previous picture. So our challenge really is to understand why it is that even when we remove the inhibitory molecules in the spinal cord, we fail to get what I would call good regeneration. What can we do about it? And frankly, we've been working at this since 1913 when Cahal and Teo first published their paper, and it's about time we fixed it. So the problem is that what we have not dealt with so far is the intrinsic regenerative ability of the axons and of the neurons. So what happens during development is that we go from embryonic neurons, whose axons will regenerate through anything, pretty much, to adult CNS axons, which will regenerate through almost nothing and are very, very easy to block. So there's a developmental change in axons, which changes their ability to grow. There's also a difference between the axons of the peripheral nervous system and the central nervous system. The peripheral axons have a high regenerative ability. The central ones have a low regenerative ability. So what can we do about this? So, you know, we've been doing this so long, for over 100 years, that this problem has taken on almost sort of mystical characteristics. And what I want to tell you, I think, today is actually it's not very mystical at all. It's quite simple if we understand what we're trying to do. And I think actually what we're trying to do is simply to get into the tip of a growing axon a complex that looks like this. The axon will grow if we have a adhesion molecule or a growth factor molecule which signals into the inside of the axon in order to influence the cytoskeleton and the growth machinery. So I think the story I'm going to tell you today is a simple one. If we can achieve a signaling complex in the tip of the cut axon, it will regenerate. And the challenge simply is to get one of these things into our axon, and then we will enable it to grow. So I'll show you an example of that working and try and persuade you that this is all we're trying to do. So in order to answer questions like why don't axons regenerate, what's the difference in intrinsic ability, we need a key. We need a tool to follow. And the tool we chose to use is integrins. And in fact, you can see them in the previous slide. Here's an integrin with an alpha and beta subunit signaling through the beta tail inside the axon. We chose integrins simply because they are an example of a molecule that makes axons grow, that makes cells migrate. That we could have chosen a different molecule, but integrins we thought were a good example with which to study this problem of why don't axons regenerate. And when we started the problem, when we started this project, we really had two thoughts, two expectations of what might happen. In fact, both of these have turned out to work quite well. The first expectation we had was actually integrins could be a therapeutic, that if we could get the right integrin to the right place into growth cones, that this would stimulate axon regeneration and we would get axons to regenerate in the spinal cord. And I'll show you an example of that. But we also thought we might use integrins as what we call a pit canary, an indicator of where things have gone wrong. You know, here's a molecule that's very much involved in the growth process. If we can understand what's happened to integrins where axons are failing to grow, then maybe, you know, the canary would fall off its perch where bad things are happening inside the axon. And this would tell us basically where we should be looking in terms of restoring regenerative ability. And I'll show you examples where we've used integrins also for this purpose. But I want to start off thinking about integrins as a potential therapeutic. And here, the logic is actually rather simple. So integrins bind to glycoproteins. The major extracellular matrix glycoprotein in the CNS is tenascin, as Andreas no doubt is going to tell you. And after injury, tenascin C is greatly upregulated. So there is a lot of this potential integrin ligand present in the damaged spinal cord. The problem is that if you look, adult CNS, and in fact PNS neurons, do not express a tenascin-binding integrin. And so in the context of the adult spinal cord, tenascin is basically an inhibitory molecule. It's your enemy. But the question is, can you turn your enemy into your friend by expressing an appropriate integrin, which allows the axons now to recognize tenascin and therefore to grow through this inhibitory terrain? So I'm going to use this diagram at several points in the talk. This is basically a picture of integrin trafficking and integrin transport in axons. So we've got integrin synthesis, we've got integrin transport, and we've got trafficking in the growth cone. So the issue here is that adult neurons express the wrong integrins for their environment, and not only that, when you cut them, they don't change the integrin expression to express a useful integrin. So the experiment that we did first is a very simple one. We take alpha-9 beta-1 integrin, which is the tenascin-binding integrin, and we express it in sensory neurons, and we ask, can these axons regenerate in the spinal cord? Now, we already knew that when we expressed alpha-9 integrin in sensory neurons in culture, they would grow beautifully on a tenascin surface. So we tried to repeat this in the spinal cord, expressing alpha-9 and making either a dorsal root crush or a dorsal column crush. And what we saw was rather underwhelming. We saw beautiful regeneration in vitro, but when we looked in vivo, I'm sorry, this is just straight out of the paper, what we saw was just a small amount of regeneration. This looks impressive as an amount of increase in axon growth, but in fact, it's just a little bit of regeneration into the scar tissue, and we saw a little bit of return of heat sensation. So clearly something was wrong. We got beautiful regeneration in vitro, we got poor regeneration in the spinal cord. What's the problem? The problem is that integrins can be activated and deactivated. This is a picture of an active integrin, which can bind to a ligand and can signal through focal adhesion kinase to various places. But integrins can also be inactivated, in which case they can't bind the ligand and they can't signal. Now, the process of conversion from inactive to active is handled in cells by two molecules. There's one called TALIN, which binds to the tail of the beta integrin, and there's one called KINDLIN, which also binds to the tail of the beta integrin. TALIN is an enormous molecule that you can't do experiments with, but KINDLIN is a manageable size. And so we found that if we express KINDLIN in cells, it converts inactive integrin to active integrin, simply by binding KINDLIN to this point here. So the problem we were facing is that if we express integrins in axons, they do nothing because they are inactivated by chondroitin sulfate proteoglycans and by no-go A. Now, we don't know the signaling pathway that causes integrin inactivation, but it's very clear that these inhibitory molecules act by converting active integrins to inactive integrins. So clearly what we had to do in order to make an integrin strategy work for regeneration was to force the integrins into the active state by expressing this molecule kindlin. So here's the experiments in vitro first in which we've done this. So these are sensory neurons, adult sensory neurons, growing first of all on laminin, and they express the correct integrins for that, and therefore whatever you do, they grow beautiful axons on a laminin surface. On a tenascin surface, they don't grow. But if you express alpha-9 integrin, they do grow, but their growth is inhibited by either NOGO or chondroitin sulfates. So if we now express alpha-9 plus activating kindlin-1, we can now get growth on tenascin, but also we can overcome the inhibition of the chondroitin sulfate proteoglycans by activating the integrin. So this is clearly what we had to do now in vivo. We had to express the alpha-9 integrin and kindlin-1 to activate it. And the experiment was to look at the cervical cord and to crush the dorsal roots at levels C6, 7, 8, and T1, and to inject the virus into these two spinal levels here, and then crush the dorsal root. So here's, this actually is a pilot short-term experiment, but here is the dorsal root, and the yellow neurons are expressing both alpha-9 and kindlin. Here's the axons in the dorsal root, and the crush is 1, 2, 3 crushes like so, and you can see many axons now have regenerated into the spinal cord and into the dorsal columns, and in fact, in the long-term experiment, we see much more regeneration than this. And if we look in the spinal cord at the level of the entry of these axons, we see lots and lots of axons, and we see them going pretty much up to the hindbrain level, up to C1, C2. We don't see them entering the sensory nuclei, and so we're not reconstructing the entire sensory pathway, but nevertheless we are getting regeneration over 5 or 6 spinal levels within the spinal cord. So this is a lot more than we'd been seeing previously. If we look at the functional result of this regeneration, again it's looking pretty good. So this is physiology in which we stimulate the dorsal, the peripheral nerve rather, and we record within the dorsal column. And so here is a normal dorsal horn recording, and you can see a large postsynaptic potential here. If we take control animals with no treatment, basically there's nothing that goes into the spinal cord. If we take alpha-9 alone, we get some regeneration. Kindlin alone, we get some regeneration. But the combination gives us a much larger connection. And this is not normal. It's about half normal size in terms of the postsynaptic potentials. If we look at behavior, first of all, this is touch sensation. So this is withdrawal of the paw when you poke from underneath with a hair. This is quite interesting. So you see a reduction in sensation, and you don't see very much recovery with controls or alpha-9 alone or kindlin alone, but the combination gives you basically a restoration of touch function. When we look at heat sensation, which is this one here, in fact, all these treatments are successful, as we'd seen before. In fact, kindlin and alpha-9 and the combination all can restore heat sensation, but in the controls, you see the deficit continuing. In terms of limb behavior, here's some animals walking down a ladder, and this is a normal animal when he stops messing around, walking down the ladder, and you can see they don't very often make mistakes with their hands. Here's a control animal that's received a control virus, and you can see this animal is hopeless. He has no idea where his leg is at all. And here's animals that received alpha-9 and kindlin together, and basically they have pretty good function. There's occasional foot slips, but more or less restoration of function. So here's a summary of where we think this has got us to. So first of all, alpha-9 integrin expression allows axons to grow on a surface of tenascin in vitro. But in vivo, we have a problem, which is that proteoglycans and NOGA-A both inactivate this integrin. If we activate the integrin forcefully with kindlin, it allows the axons to overcome this inhibition. And therefore, in sensory axons, which transport integrins? Now, this is, you will see as we come on, a crucial three words, which transport integrins. Co-expression of kindlin and alpha-9 promotes extensive axon growth and functional recovery. And so the conclusion is if you get receptors and ligands to the correct place, axons will regenerate. This is what I said at the beginning of the presentation. So I think this is, to us, this is a sort of strategy validation. You know, if you can get the right axon, the right receptors to the right place, you can get axons to regenerate. And so the question is then, if this is working in sensory axons, would it work now in, for instance, corticospinal axons, in real CNS axons? And this is where we come on to the second strategy, using our integrins as an indicator of things that might have gone wrong. So first of all, let's look at some cortical axons regenerating or failing to regenerate. So first of all, this is an in vitro experiment in which we see a young, fit, developing cortical neuron in a dish. It's been labeled with GFP. There's many, many, many other axons around here. And it's just been cut with a laser at this point here. It makes a new growth cone. It regenerates. It pauses a bit. It's not completely normal. But these young axons, if you cut them, will regenerate. If you now take an axon that has matured in vitro for, this, in this case, 30 days, you see something very different. So it's been cut with a laser. You'll see a retraction bulb here in a moment. There it is. And this is the GFP that you're looking at. And you can see the GFP continues to be transported into this swelling, this active swelling, at the tip of the axon. So you get an active retraction bulb with stuff happening in it, but this will never convert to a new axon and will never regenerate. So if you quantify this, the blues are successful regeneration. You can see that young, immature neurons will regenerate their axons. Old ones will not regenerate their axons, particularly if you cut the axon at some distance from the cell body. So there's a developmental change in the intrinsic regenerative ability of the axons, just as we see in vivo. We also see in a similar assay a difference between sensory axons, peripheral axons. Here it's been cut. There is the almost immediate regeneration. That's so quick, I'll show you again, of the axon. So sensory axons regenerate very efficiently. But if we look at an adult CNS axon from the retina, we see something very similar to what I showed you before. It's been cut here. Here is this retraction bulb, this active swelling at the tip of the axon. You can see there's lots of action, but no regeneration. Eventually that axon will just degenerate. So in a very, very simple tissue culture assay, you can see these differences in the intrinsic regenerative ability of old and young, of central and peripheral nervous system. So what's going on here? Can we explain it? So now let's go back to integrins and see if we can provide, with the integrin idea, an explanation of these differences in behavior. So first of all, let's look at integrins and how they are distributed within these different types of neuron. So first of all, these are sensory, good regenerating neurons, good regenerating axons, filled with an integrin using a virus. And you can see that the integrin is expressed in the cell bodies, and it's transported beautifully into the peripheral nerve, the sciatic nerve. It's transported into the dorsal root. It's transported into the spinal cord. So the integrin, in this case, will distribute to all the processes of this neuron. But if we look at a central cortical neuron, the situation is very different. Here is a mature cortical neuron in a dish. This is the intrinsic expression of beta-1 integrin. You can see it in the dendrites. But here is a marker of the axon initial segment. The axon continues across the screen. The integrin is completely excluded from the axon. We see the same if we express an integrin in the cortex. Here's the apical dendrite. The axons contain no integrin at all. So you might ask how these axons ever grew. Well, the answer is if you label young growing axons, you do see integrin transported into the axons. So this is a developmental change. Young axons transport integrin, old axons don't. And we see very similar things with other types of receptors. This is a TRAC receptor, or a pan-TRAC antibody. Here is a young neuron, TRACs in the dendrites, TRACs in the axon, TRACs in the growth cone. But if we now look at a mature neuron, this is the axon initial segment. Here are all dendrites. But the axon itself is completely empty of TRACs. So TRAC receptors are also excluded from mature axons. We see a very similar picture with Rab11. We'll come on to Rab11. This is a recycling endosome that carries receptors to the cell surface. here is a young neuron. Here is Rab11 carrying things like integrins and TRACs into the axon. But if we look at an old neuron, a mature neuron, here is the axon here, do you see, that's marked with arrows. And you can see the dendrites are full of Rab11. The axon has none. In other words, Rab11 has been excluded from the axon. So the conclusion we have is that many types of receptors, integrins, TRACs, the things carried by Rabs, IGF receptors, and also ribosomes, are excluded from axons as they become mature. So essentially, all these molecules are being excluded from the axons of mature CNS neurons, whereas axons that regenerate well and embryonic neurons will transport them. So essentially, your CNS axon is becoming a signaling dead zone. You know, there's nothing there. There's no receptors. There's no signaling going on. It's not very surprising, frankly, that when you cut it, not a lot happens. So in order to get our CNS axons to regenerate, we've got to do two things. We've got to do what I just showed you earlier, which is to get a good receptor and express it. But then we've got to get the receptor into the axon, and this is the problem we have currently. So in other words, we've got to get our receptor from the cell body here, through all this stuff here, into the growth cone, where it can recycle and cause axons to grow. So I want to talk now a bit about this process of getting our integrin, or our TRAC, or whatever, from this point here to this point here. What's the problem? Now, unfortunately, I think you can see from this diagram that there are many hurdles that your molecule has to go through in order to get from the cell body to the dendrite. But let's just go through the normal process together. You express molecule in the cell body. Most cell adhesion molecules are, first of all, put into the membrane in the somatodendritic part of the cell. In other words, they're placed into the cell body membrane or the dendrite membrane. And from there, they are recycled in recycling endosomes into the transport pathway, which takes them down the axon. And the recycling pathway happens in two types of endosomes. They are marked with GTPases, which we'll come back to. One is called Rab11, and one is called ARF6. And it's these GTPases that mostly determine the behavior of these endosomes. So inside these endosomes, our integrins or whatever have to be transported down the axon, and then they have to be inserted in the membrane, and within the growth cone there is a recycling center where they can be recycled. So what's going wrong? Well, unfortunately, as you can see, there are many possibilities, and I'm just going to talk to you about two which we believe are correct, but I'll just quickly go down this list. Are they not being transported because there's no integrin? No, that is incorrect. There is integrin present. Do they form heterodimers? Yes, they do. That is incorrect. Is there a lack of an integrin ligand? No, there's plenty of ligand. Is there a lack of a correct kinesin? No, there are two main kinesins, kinesin 1 and kinesin 2, that travel down axons. So that's incorrect. Is it because there's too much retrograde transport with dynein? No, when we block dynein transport, we still don't get integrins going into the axon. Is it because there's a sorting process directed by AP1 or one of these sorting processes, which is directing the integrin to dendrites? The answer is no, that doesn't seem to be happening, because when we block that process, the integrins still go to the dendrites and not the axons. So the two things I want to talk to you about are a selective block of transport at the axon initial segment, and failure of transport down the axon due to the properties of these recycling endosomes, Rab11 and ARF6. So let's talk first of all about the axon initial segment. Now, I think you probably saw from the picture I showed you earlier that integrin basically appears to be stopped at the axon initial segment, right at the beginning of the axon. And the axon initial segment is a very specialized zone, which looks like this. You have a scaffolding molecule, an organizing molecule called ankyrin G, which holds together a variety of ion channels and other receptors on the cell surface, and links via spectrin to the cytoskeleton, to actin, and the actin cytoskeleton is specialized also at the axon initial segment, and also to the microtubules. And again, there are particular specializations of the microtubules at the axon initial segment. But the thing that makes it possible to study this structure is that the thing that holds it all together is ankyrin G. So if you knock down ankyrin G, it kind of falls apart. So what happens if we knock down ankyrin G in our cortical neurons? Does that allow integrins to enter the axons? Does it allow them to grow? Well, a bit is the answer. So here is an animal, a cell rather, in which this has been done with an shRNA. Now this is integrin that you're, GFP that you're seeing, and this is the integrin stain here. Now normally there would be no integrin at all at this point here, further down the axon, but where we knock down ankyrin G, there is in fact a little bit, not very much, but a little bit. So if we demolish the axon initial segment, some integrin gets into the axon. But what I would say is this is a fairly short-term experiment. And I think if we did this for longer, we would see a bigger effect and more integrin going into the axon. And this is something we're going to be following up. But the other change we see as the axons mature is a change in the directionality of transport. So I'm going to show you now a picture of alpha-9 integrin expressed in a cortical neuron that has become mature in vitro. And I want you to look at the axon, which is this structure here. I think it's going to recycle, okay? And you can see all these integrin-containing vesicles. These will be ARF6 and Rab11 vesicles, and they are all going retrogradely. Now, what we see as the axon matures is a change in the overall directionality of transport. So in young neurons, we see more or less an equal amount of anterograde and retrograde transport. But as the neuron matures, the retrograde transport becomes predominant. And of course, if all the integrin is going retrogradely, the axon will empty, and eventually it will look as if the integrin is being excluded from the axon. So we see a change in the directionality of transport. And that transport, the rapid transport, is happening mostly in vesicles of the ARF6 type, which travel down microtubules, and partly in these Rab11 vesicles, which can attach both to actin and to tubulin. So why do we think this is happening? Well, in previous experiments, we've looked at the behavior of this ARF6 transport molecule in sensory axons. These are the ones that will transport integrin. So you can study this. And it turns out that these GTPases, ARF6 and Rab11, like all GTPases, can exist in an active and an inactive form. And they're activated by GEFs. You can remember this is GEF because it stands for excellent function. And GAPs, which stands for absolutely pathetic, which are the inactivators. And basically, this is the forward-reverse gear for these vesicles. So when GEFs are overexpressed, you see retrograde transport. GAPs cause antegrade transport. Now, what appears to be happening during development is we're seeing an upregulation of two GEFs. One's called ARNO, and one is called EFA6. Those both come up strongly during development, and those are causing activation of ARF6 and causing the flow now to become retrograde. So what happens if we stop this happening? If we either overexpress a GAP or a dominant negative form of one of these GEFs? Well, what we can do then is restore some antegrade transport. If we now force ARF6 into the inactive state, the GDP form of ARF6, And does this do us any good? Yes, this is integrin in the axon. So this is distance down the axon here. This is the amount of integrin on this axis. And in controls, we only see integrin in the initial segment, essentially. But when we express a dominant negative GEF, Arno, we now see integrin transported much further. And importantly, we also see an increase in axon growth. Now, we think at the moment this is a partial solution to the problem because ARF6 and RAB11 act together. And we think that we haven't actually dealt with our problem with RAB11, which is undergoing a similar change, and that's what we're working on currently. RAB11 probably also becomes overactivated and starts to go retrogradely. But at any rate, this is where we have got at the moment and what we, a paper we've just published. This again is the same graph, amount of integrin, distance down the axon. This is controls. These are the various things we've tried out. And here is increased transport when we do a inactivation of ARF6. So I think, you know, where we are now is we're starting to understand what our problem is, and we're starting to get some tools that we think we can use to solve it. So we believe that we have to be able to get integrins, tracks, other molecules into axons in order for them to regenerate, in order to make the axon a signaling zone rather than a signaling dead zone. We think there's transport block at the axon initial segment, and there's transport block because of control of the directionality of trafficking by the two small GTPases, ARF6 and RAB11. So to summarize, you know, that's the current situation. That's a CNS axon there. That's a CNS neuron. There's a trafficking block at this point here as the axon matures, and therefore the good stuff is never making it into the axon. So what's happening is because of selective transport, your CNS axons are crippled, and they lack the components that are necessary for axon growth. It's like the car with no wheels I've got in the picture. Now, in very favorable circumstances, you can get these axons to grow a bit. You know, it's not that they have zero growth machinery. They have a little bit. But growth fails with just the slightest amount of inhibition, and therefore it's never going to be very successful. We've got to find a way to get these growth molecules, these receptors, into the axons and express the correct receptors. So in other words, to stimulate CNS axon regeneration, we can neutralize inhibitory molecules. We know how to do that now. We've got to enhance the regenerative ability of the CNS axons, first of all by getting the right molecules there. An example is this combination of alpha-9 integrin and kindlin, but there are other ways, other types of receptor you could use for this purpose. And you've got to change axon trafficking so that the growth-related molecules are not excluded at the initial segment. So eventually what you're trying to restore is a normal growth cone trafficking growth process. You've got integrins, tracks, or whatever arriving in recycling endosomes. They've got to be inserted on the cell surface, incorporated into a signaling complex, linked to the cytoskeleton, where they will be endocytosed and recycled again. Now, I think there are actually a number of ways of doing this. You know, we've talked about the transport processes, and probably there are several ways of restoring transport. There are also several points at which you can kick this cycle to activate it, and you know, they're written down here. It may not matter particularly which of these interventions you use, just as long as you stimulate this circular process of recycling at the growth cone. So that's where we are, and you know, I think to summarize, I'm much more hopeful that we're going to be able to do this than I was 5 years ago. I think we can understand what the problem is. I think we can see what potential solutions would be, and I'm actually quite upbeat that we're going to find a solution to this problem of regeneration in the spinal cord. So the people who did this work, the alpha-9 expression in the spinal cord was done by Melissa Andrews and Stefan Kvitkovich. And then we went on to the integrin activation experiments, which are done by Chinlik Tan, and the co-expression in the spinal cord of integrin and kindlin is done by Menghon, who's still in the lab, just finished his PhD. Then the recycling and the transport experiments have been done by Elsker, by Richard, and the CNS cortical regeneration model that I showed you is being done by Hiroaki Koseki in the lab, and I forgot to mention Rongrong, who was also involved in the transport and trafficking experiments. So I'll stop there and thank you very much for your attention.